Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you so much to my dear friend Christina for inviting me. And I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about pilgrimage, some of my experiences as a pilgrim, and some of the many gifts that pilgrimage has offered me throughout the course of the last decade or so. So I've walked, at this point, thousands of kilometers on many different routes over about 13 years. So I think I can officially call myself a pilgrim, a badge I wear with pride. But the lessons I've learned on the trail are, I think, eminently translatable to life off the trail. And I want to talk about one of those lessons in particular today, that of cultivating devotion, particularly to the landscape and the natural world. But first, a little bit about pilgrimage in general. So the most well-known pilgrimage in Christendom is probably the Camino de Santiago. Probably lots of you have heard of it. But for those of you who haven't, it's an 800-kilometer pilgrimage that leads from the border of France and Spain to the western coast of Spain. But what we refer to as the Camino is actually a whole network of pilgrimage routes that span Western Europe, their ultimate destination being the city of Santiago de Compostela, the heart of the westernmost province of Spain, Galicia. So all of these routes end at the Cathedral of Compostela, where the relics of the Apostle James are housed, and where pilgrims whisper their darkest secrets and deepest hopes into the Apostle's ear. The most famous of these routes is the Camino Francis, which bisects Spain across its belly. There are other routes, though, including the two that frame the experiences that I'm going to talk about today. One of them is the Camino del Norte, and it runs along the northern coast of Spain, and the Camino Primitivo. So the Primitivo, in particular, has remained almost entirely unchanged in its route since at least 900, and possibly as early as 600. So, as Christina mentioned, I'm at least in part a historian of ancient religions, so this really appeals to my nerdy sensibilities. But it's not only the history of these routes that interests me. It's also the idea that to be a pilgrim, one's pursuit is to seek after the divine, to come closer to God. The earliest pilgrims on these routes believed that they were on their way to actually see God. They believed they were walking with God, were protected by God. So every step towards Santiago was a step closer to him. These Christian pilgrims also believed that the ground they walked on was holy ground. Walking these routes was a way to grab hold of the sacred and bring a little bit of it back home to share with their loved ones. These pilgrimages could be extraordinarily dangerous, with perils ranging from disease to banditry to pitching over cliff sides in the dark. The stresses on the body were intense, as they still are. But these radically pious pilgrims risked all this and more. Why? Because they believed that there was no better way to express their devotion. What an amazing thing to do. What an extraordinary way to decide to move through the world. So I myself have what you might call a complicated relationship with God. I grew up the daughter of a Baptist preacher, which maybe the hymns I chose is a bit of a tell. And for that reason, you'll have to forgive me if I ramp up a bit. But my father is a man who started as a preacher, later turned theologian, and even later moved away from the church altogether, all of which had a profound impact on my development as a spiritual person. I have a deep respect for faith, for devotion, for Christianity, but I often shy away from questions of belief and the nature of the divine in particular. Yet here I am, a multi-time pilgrim, a seeker. What am I doing walking these routes if I'm not even sure God is there, if I'm not sure God is anywhere? Initially, I took some comfort in the fact that the modern practice of pilgrimage is very different from that of the ancient pilgrims. A lot of pilgrims you encounter nowadays are preoccupied only with internal questions, like, who am I? What should I do with my life? How do I navigate my new job, my new life stage, my new relationship status? How do I survive the pain of loss? The space to meditate on these questions draws pilgrims to the Camino year after year after year. Because being on the Camino means you only have one job every day, to walk. Even the daily destinations are not set. You walk until you can't anymore, and then you stop. The liberation from the structure of modern life is intoxicating and addictive because it provides the space to meditate on the self. But the original purpose of the route, the pursuit of the divine, has been largely lost. There's very little God talk on the Camino these days. Indeed, many pilgrims I have met are professed atheists or even contemptuous of organized religion, belief, and doctrine. Many pilgrims arrive in Santiago only to find it anticlimactic, the pilgrim mass pointless, the meeting with the apostle empty. In the absence of God, the Camino becomes more about the journey than the destination, and the concept of devotion is almost entirely lost. It is my impression that the absence of devotion is a hallmark of our times, even inside of faith communities. There is often more of a focus on action, on doing, than there is on cultivating a sense of devotion. And of course, with so many situations demanding action, the action of good people, I would hardly advocate for us to sit on our hands when there is so much work to be done. But what happens when that work feels insurmountable? It's so easy to feel depressed. It's easy to feel like our daily actions add up to nothing. So how do we go on when even our absolute best is not enough? On pilgrim routes, I have a lot of ups and downs, literally and metaphorically, as you may imagine. On the bad days when my feet hurt or my knees ache or it rains or I feel tired or sad or lonely, it's hard to remember what I'm doing there. Why go on when the way becomes difficult? Why on earth would anyone walk 800 kilometers across a country not their own towards a saint they don't really believe is there? What am I doing there? And where is my devotion? And what is devotion without God? On a day of surpassing beauty in a wild landscape, these questions can fade. There are days when the land is so lush, the sky so brilliant, that nothing can adulterate the experience. In moments like these, the euphoria of being in the wild places is more than enough to motivate me to continue. As I march alongside the crashing waves of the coastline and ascend mountain passes, I find myself falling in love with the landscape in all its incarnations. The salt air, the smell of crushed pine needles underfoot fill my heart to bursting, and the euphoria of being so close to land and sea feels a lot like the euphoria of first love. On one of my pilgrimages, I realized suddenly that over the course of my walking, I had become devoted to the land. What God might have been for some of those early pilgrims, the land was becoming for me. As I moved through landscapes of staggering beauty, I felt protected, cared for. The vistas and the breezes seemed made for me. They brought me comfort in the face of an enterprise that seemed at times impossible. The sunrises and sunsets offered ravishing colors, but also a sense of peace. All I had was what was on my back, and I had never felt so full. I was the sparrow, the raven, the lilies of the field. Whatever might happen when I returned home, I was safe here, safe now. My heart filled with love. I remember a time walking in the Cantabrian mountains, surrounded by sea and sky, that I came across three perfect coils of cow dung nestled in the grass. It was so beautiful that it brought me to tears, that perfect pile of poop. On days like these, you don't ask yourself why you walk or whether you ought to continue. But there comes a time in every party, as a good friend of mine is wont to say, when you've got to pay the band. Nothing beautiful comes for free. Because the pilgrim routes, you see, pass not only through idylls and wonders, but also through industrial zones and waste management plants, as the trail snakes into and out of cities along the way. The relentlessness of concrete urban sprawl after the beauty of the trail highlighted for me the depth of our depravity, our greed in relation to our landscapes. More than once, I've wept from the tragedy of it, the destruction of what had come to feel like my heart. I felt depressed at the knowledge that no plastic bag ban, no drinking straw prohibition, no zero waste household on its own could ever repair the damage we have already done. I remember a particularly grim stretch exiting the city of Bilbao, a road strewn with garbage and car parts, the churning of a cesspool audible in the distance that felt like a conviction. And so it was with a downtrodden spirit that I returned to the sea. The route opened up again and became beautiful, but I felt differently about my relationship to it. There is a particular place on this route that I will never forget. It was part of an alternate route with lots of scrabbling around on rocky headlands and jagged outcroppings. Sorry, I know you don't like it when I do that. With payoffs of spectacular ocean views. A path wound down to the beach, a narrow strip of reddish gold sand with cliffs rising high on either side of it. In this place, the waves crash endlessly, rolling in one after another like a wave pool, but a wave pool with the power of the ocean behind it. I was struck by the force of it, the sheer strength and fury of the ocean as it pounded the beach. The white caps rushed towards the land like they were being driven by Poseidon himself. I felt suddenly the knowledge that the ocean could and should rise up and destroy us all. How we deserve it, how we have earned it. But it struck me too that it's not true that we're destroying the earth. We're actually destroying ourselves and our place in it. The earth, the ocean, they will go on long after we do not, just as they were here before we were. So, before I lose you, before you start to think, hey, I came here to be inspired and uplifted, and I heard that pilgrimage was a cool thing, etc., not about how you want the sea to swallow us up, let me explain what this has to do with devotion. So I said I had become devoted to the landscape, and this is true. But I think sometimes we associate devotion only with the cozy goodness of what we love, with the kindness and the comfort and the assurance that we can receive. We bask in today's gospel text, which tells us not to worry, that God will take care of us. But we cannot forget the first text we heard, of God speaking to Job out of the whirlwind. This is God too. How can we hear those words and not feel awe, not feel ashamed of our arrogance and our self-importance, not feel fear? For make no mistake, fear and devotion are not mutually exclusive. My ardor for the landscape only grew after the day I felt my heart quake with the crashing of each wave. Just as Job recognized the truth of God's words when they came barreling towards him, so too can our devotion take root when we recognize the awe that can motivate it. When we talk about our responsibility to nature, to climate justice, to each other, we often talk about ourselves as stewards. We talk about how it is our duty to reduce the harm we are inflicting on our environment, on the places that have offered us a home. But what if we're going about this the wrong way? What if our relationship to the earth, our home, were to be one not of responsibility, but rather one of fierce devotion? And what if that devotion were to be born not only of love and gratitude, but also of fear? Because we ought to fear the forces that are greater than us. We do not tame the ocean. She will never be tamed. We cannot domesticate the earth, no matter how many pastures we mark out with fences, sprawling cities we build, pipelines we slice through her. The earth has the power to rise up and destroy us. We're helping her along, that's for sure, by making our places less hospitable to us than they could be. But we are merely interlopers. We are finite beings playing at managing the infinite. So what if we tried to adopt a pilgrim spirit in our relationship to nature? What if we spent at least a little of our time trying to cultivate devotion, fierce devotion, radical devotion to the divine in nature? Because inside devotion, our purpose is clear. Even a pilgrim has to perform the duties of daily life, walking step by step in a routine way. And if we are to address the problems of climate change, environmental justice, indeed all modes of justice, we must perform daily actions in a routine way. But actions on their own can start to feel meaningless, and the temptation becomes to simply stop performing them, to stop pushing because the pushing is too difficult or feels hopeless. But inside a spirit of devotion, to stop is unthinkable. So maybe you have an easy relationship with God. Maybe your belief is firm. In that case, your devotion to him would and should extend to his creation, for he calls you to do so. He calls you with tenderness, but also with fury. Do not turn away from this. Do not be afraid to express ardent devotion to all that he has made. Or maybe your beliefs are less clear. Maybe you find the divine in the landscape, as I do, more easily than in the figure of God. In that case, do not turn away. Do not be afraid to express ardent devotion to this sacred space in which we have the immense fortune to spend a sliver of cosmic time. So let me close by encouraging us to think like pilgrims. Whether you walk or not, whether you go out on trail or not, to think like a pilgrim, to cultivate devotion to our landscapes, to nature, to each other. Because inside of devotion, inside of love, there is no room for turning away from the harm that we inflict. But nothing drives us to action quite like devotion either. And that action, housed inside devotion, brings us closer to the divine. Amen.